Okay, good morning, everyone. Today's daf in Me'ila is daf Yates. We are on Yud Ches Amud Beis, and we started the new parak, fifth parak of Me'ila, which is really just a almost like a beginning point of Me'ila, even though it's the fifth parak, and even though it's we have just a couple more days to go before we finish the Masechta. But it's really a new point of Me'ila, in which we're talking now some of the most basic rules of Me'ila. The Mishnah said that in order to be a Moel, in order to get the penalty of Me'ila, so you have to be mol behekdesh in a way in which you depreciate its value. It's, as I mentioned yesterday, we kind of like had an accounting discussion yesterday. Because you don't always have to depreciate its value. Sometimes you could be mol without depreciating its value. It depends on what the item is. If it's an item that's subject to depreciation, so therefore you have to depreciate its value. If it's an item that's not subject to depreciation, so then you could be mol without depreciating its value. So the Mishnah gave examples. Let's say, for example, it's jewelry or a gold cup. So... And we're going to talk about this later this morning. It's true, it will depreciate over the long haul. But in the short term, however, there's no real depreciation. I borrow a gold cup, I use it, I give it back. It's the same gold cup. So when it comes to something like that, and I use it, and I get benefit from it, so there I'm in violation of Me'ila, even if I do not depreciate its value, as long as I get Hana, and the Hana is a Shava Pruta, so then I'm going to be in violation of Me'ila. If it's something like clothing, for example... clothing, which is going to depreciate, so there, I'm only going to be mol if I depreciate its value by Shava Pruta. Meaning, of course, I'm going to get benefit from the item, but I also, in addition to getting benefit from the item, I have to depreciate the item by a Shava Pruta. That is, that's what the Mishnah taught us. If you remember yesterday, we had a machlokas between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim in the Mishnah. As we explained, Rabbi Kiva doesn't fundamentally disagree with the Chachamim. In fact, fundamentally, he agrees with the Chachamim to this type of compartmentalizing and this type of accounting, that there are things that are subject to depreciation, things that are not subject to depreciation. What is subject to debate between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim are things that depreciate not in the short term, but not in the long term. Right? The example the Gemara gave yesterday was the middle garment. Right, with the not the garment that you wear against your skin, not the garment that you wear on the outside, which are subject to depreciation right away, but the middle garment, which will take a little bit longer to depreciate. With that, in other words, in there, Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim are having quite a debate about accounting. Which line item does that go under? Does that go under things that are subject to depreciation? Does that thing go under things which are not subject to depreciation? That is the way the Gemara explained the machlok between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim. Then we continued in the Gemara yesterday, and we started the Braisa. And the Braisa basically told us that there were two models of Me'ila. There's a Sota model of Me'ila, and there is a and there's an Avodah Zarah model of Me'ila. Meaning, two times in Tanakh where we see the word Mal actually being used out of the context of Me'ila, as we've been discussing now for the past 3 weeks, but in the context of other forms of treachery. Other forms of rebellion. Number one, the woman who has an affair, right? Now the Sota, we don't know exactly if she had an affair or not, but she did a number of things wrong. She talked with another man extensively. She was warned by her husband not to talk with that man. She then secluded herself with that man in another room. We don't exactly know what happened, so she's a Sota now, and with all the right fine, she. She's a Sota. So the Torah over there, when introducing us to the Parsha of Sota, ish ki sifta ishto, uma'ala bama'al. So the Gemara describes her as being treacherous. So that's one model, so to say, of Me'ila. Another one is found in Divrei Hayamim. Now Divrei Hayamim, the Navi over there describes how the Jews left HaKadosh Baruch Hu and moved over to Avodah Zarah. And again, that is also in the context of Me'ila. The pasuk says in Divrei Hayamim, we quoted the pasuk at the end of yesterday's daf, "Vayimalu be'elohei avosehem, vayizanu acharei haba'alim." They were treacherous against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they turned to other gods. Now, as the Gemara will point out, the Gemara is going to make this point a little bit clearer later on, and Tosfos over here discusses this at length. Basically, what do these two models speak to? These two models speak to basically two different types of Me'ila. Meaning, by the Sota, so she didn't leave her husband. In other words, she's still a married woman, even though she did something which was obviously very bad, and even though she was moel, but she didn't leave her husband. So there was no shina rishus. Yes, it's true, she's going to be asked to her husband if in fact she had an adulterous affair. But even though she's going to be asked to her husband, it's still her husband. So, and furthermore, we can also make another point by the Sota, which is there was no pigima by the Sota, meaning that the Sota, when she had an affair, she didn't go through a physical change. In other words, she already was a married woman, which means that she already had relations with her husband. So she didn't go through a physical change in having this mi'ila. In other words, still the same woman. So that is it. So it's basically the Sota. If we're going to try to encapsulate what kind of treasure we're talking about, it's Hana, meaning it's really a function of that she was nene with another man. So really, it's for her for the Sota model. It's really a formula of Hana. That's the kind of mi'ila it is, as opposed to avodah zarah. Hard to say that avodah zarah is a function of Hana. Right, it's not, but what you did, however, is you left the Kadosh Baruch Hu and you went to Avodah Zarah. That's a change. That's a total change. A shinui, meaning. So we look at these two models of Me'ila. They really fall into two different types of Me'ila. One is all about the benefit, and the other one's all about the change. And as we're going to be discussing over the course of this morning, you got to keep these two models of Me'ila in mind: Hana versus change. Okay, that's all the.
Just diving to the Avodah Zarah for financial benefit. That's only Hana.
Yeah, again, the way the Gemara sets it up, and Tosafot says it also very clearly. Once you go to Avodah Zarah, that's it. You're left.
But you can come back.
Of course you can come back. But in other words, but the act itself is really an act of shinui. Okay, shinui meaning you leave God. You're no longer with God. Well, as opposed to the Sota, even though she commits adultery, she's still married to her original husband. So, yes, I understand. On many levels, she left her husband. But legally speaking, she's still married.
And most men don't think their husband's alive.
Right. I'm working on that. I know. Okay. We move on. We're on the top of Yudches Amud Beis and Yachol. So a funny place to start, but that's where we're starting. And this is a continuation of the Braisa. Now we're going to go through this Amud of Gemara Yudches Amud Beis, and we're really the entire Amud is a continuation of the Braisa. Now the Braisas we have, and I'm going to point out a couple places where it seems a little bit corrupted. The Braisa seems to be a little bit, you know. A little bit shaky, but I'll point it out. But we'll get through it, and we'll get out the main points of the Braisa, hopefully. The very top of the Amud Yechesh Amud Beis, top line Yachol. I might have thought Pogam below Nana. Let's say I'm Pogam, but I don't get benefit. So in other words, Rashi gives examples, right? And we'll go through these examples also over the course of the remaining part of the Masechta. Let's say I have a garment that's hectic. Should I tear it? I tear it. Okay, so that's a pagima. Now, am I benefiting? No. I mean, if I'm angry, I understand. But, you know, it'll get out some of my anger. But I destroyed it. I was pogam, but I didn't get hana. Oh, ne nevelo pogam. Or let's say I get benefit, but I'm not pogam. Uve mechuba lakarka, let's say it's something which is connected to the ground. Uve shlich shasa shlichusa, or let's say a shlich did exactly what he was instructed to do. So I might have thought, yachol, that in all these cases I'd be subject to me'ila. I'm just going to finish reading it, and then I'll go back to explain. I know that was a mouthful, but basically like this. We now are going to present now a third ingredient to the recipe of Me'ila. Meaning so far we've discussed Sota, so far we've discussed Avodah Zarah, and now we're going to add one more ingredient, that's Truma. Now why are we adding Truma? Now nowhere does the Torah mention Me'ila by Truma, so that's correct, but there's a Gzeir Shava. Meaning we have the word Chet by Me'ila, We have the word chet by truma, and we have gzeira shava. Now, as we mentioned already a number of times throughout Shas, there's no way that we can make up gzeira shava on our own, because I'm sure it says chet a couple of other places in the Torah. So there's no, this is not by no means just simply the word chet linking the two. It's the word chet and a mesorah and a tradition that links the two, me'ila and truma. And from this gzeira shava now, we're going to be significantly limiting the application of Me'ila. So let me go step by step as what we learn from Truma and how it translates over to Me'ila. Now, first of all, by Truma, Truma's not an Aveira, right? We understand. Truma, there's a mitzvah for Kohanim to eat Truma. They receive Truma, and there's a mitzvah to eat Truma. So, but nevertheless, though, however, there are certain aspects of Truma which we know, and we're going to now relay over to the Isser of Me'ila. So let's go step by step. Pogim manana. Okay, so number one, truma. What do? So I eat it. I know, that was very sophisticated. But I eat the truma. And not only do I eat the truma, but when am I getting benefit? When I'm eating. Meaning that I'm pogim the truma. Pogim here in this context means eating, meaning diminishing its value, depreciating it. And concurrently with that, I'm nana. I'm getting benefit from it. So
if you just destroyed truma.
So if I just destroyed truma, meaning, keep in mind, we're just taking ideas from truma and relaying it over to me'ila. Because truma is a mitzvah, and me'ila is an aveira. But we're just taking the idea that by truma, the begim and the na and the hana have to come concurrently. The same thing is true by me'ila. In order to successfully violate me'ila, the pegim and the hana have to come concurrently.
One is an
asset,
one is a
lotasset. Correct. They're fundamentally different. They're like at odds with each other in terms of what you're trying to do. But again, it's just the ideas that we're connecting. Umisha pagam nene. And furthermore, what's the story by truma? It's the one who's pogame who's getting hana. Okay. And also, it has to be, now the focus was on the person, now we're going to focus on the item. Meaning the item that's being depreciated is that which you're getting benefit from. Meaning if you're getting benefit from an item, but not through its depreciation, right, if you can be creative and think of a case. But in other words, you're getting the hana from an outside source while you're depreciating the item, that doesn't work. Meaning that's not me'ila. They have to come simultaneously. And again, all this is learned by truma, because truma, again, just think about it. The simple act of truma is to eat the truma, which means that the person who is being pogame is getting hana. And the object that you are pogame is the one providing the hana. And they are coming concurrently, the begima and the hana. So all these are aspects of truma, so now all these are going to be aspects of me'ila as well. Furthermore, the braisa continues, talishman akarka. And it has to be detached from the ground. There is no me'ila, we talked about this earlier in the Masechta, but here's the source. There is no me'ila by anything connected to the ground. Meaning, even if the item connected to the ground is hektish, which is totally possible, I could be makdish my field, right? And we spent a couple prakim and erchin talking about a person being makdish his field. I could be makdish my field, and of course, it's possible that I can misappropriate it, but you're not going to be under the penalty of me'ila if I misappropriate something that's connected to the ground. Why not? Gzera shava, it's connected to truma, and truma is only applicable to things that are disconnected from the ground. The mitzvah of truma does not begin until after the item is detached from the ground. There's no mitzvah of truma when it's connected to the ground.
So if you take an animal into the field that belongs to the Tamil Church, and you have it roam around and eat water off the ground, that's
right.
Fine.
So it's not fine, but you're not under the penalty of me'ila. It's certainly not fine what you're doing. It belongs to Hektish. It doesn't belong to you. But you're not going to be penalized with a me'ila penalty.
How about like an apple that's hanging off a tree?
Same story. Same story. In other words, if you ate it, I mean, once you detach it, I guess now you've made a talish. But if it's connected to the tree and your animal were to eat it off the tree, so then you're right. I would say you're not under the penalty of me'ila. Again, it's no way, shape, form, or it's not right. You can't do it. But it's not under the penalty of me'ila. And here's an interesting one, which we're going to talk about later on in the Masechta, Ushlich Shasa Shlichuso. Generally speaking, there's no carryover by Averos. Meaning, if you ask me to do something wrong, so, right, Ein Shlich Ledvar Avera, right, it's on me. Even though you asked me to do something, even though, no, did you ask me, let's say you sent me as a messenger, right, do me a favor, right, do this, go steal. And so I go steal. So what do I say now? Yeah, but he told me to do it. Right? So we all know how funny that is. And the Gemara itself actually says it. Divrei Arava, Divrei Tama, Divrei Mishomim. Meaning, God said not to steal. All right, so your friend told you to steal. Okay, who are you supposed to listen to? Divrei Arava, Divrei Tama, Divrei Mishomim. You're supposed to listen to Kadosh Baruch Hu. So, in general, Ein Shliach Ledvar Aver. If someone tells you to do something wrong, the Aver doesn't carry over. So I was talking about this with Aaron yesterday. There's an interesting position of Beis Shammai. Remember this? Beis Shammai says that there's one avera that does have carryover, where if somebody tells you to do something and you did it, it goes back to the mishaleach, and that is murder. I'm going to get to Me'ila in just a second. Me'ila, everyone agrees to, is an exception to the rule. But murder, right? Beis Shammai says that if you murder based on the instruction of somebody else, so Beis Shammai says that carries over to the mishaleach. But we don't pass it, huh?
Both are guilty? Only one of them.
Sounds from Beit Shammai, sounds like the Mishaleach.
And not the other
one. It's the second parak of Kiddushin.
All the snipers are in trouble.
I'll look at it. We don't pass like Beit Shammai. Right. Meaning, I'm just using that as an example. In other words, but it's not, you know, it's a shita. We don't follow that shita. But, okay, that's but anyway, the general rule is Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera. Here, in Me'ila, Yesh. There is shlichus by an avera. So if somebody sends me on a mission to misappropriate, and I do misappropriate, and I do exactly as instructed, meaning, as we're going to see later on, if I deviate from my instruction, so then the avera doesn't carry over to my mishalech, to the one who sent me. But that's only because I didn't do what I was supposed to do. But if I did exactly as instructed, and I was a proxy for somebody else, and I misappropriated based on my shlichus, so then the avera goes back to the mishaleach. Goes back to the person who instructed me to do something. Okay, we'll talk about it. But how do I know that? Meaning, first, let's just get the concept down. How do I know that? Truma. Because shlichus works by truma. Now again, Ben, you can make the exact same point. What do you mean? By truma, you're doing something good. Meaning, I'm asking somebody to take truma off for me. Does that work? Sure it works. So shlichus works by truma. In fact, one of the main sources of shlichus is truma. Right? That I can send somebody to do something on my behalf. I can send somebody to take off truma for me. So it is, if you look at the second parak of Kiddushin, it's one of the main, right, it's one of the main sources of shlichus. So and now that I have a gzera shava between truma and me'ila, so if shlichus works by truma, so oddly enough, it's going to work by me'ila. It doesn't make sense because me'ila is an avera, and normally we say ein shlichus l'dvar avera. So now this becomes a yotzei min haklal. There's an exception. Every rule's got exceptions. Here it is.
If somebody says somebody makes a shliach who's a zar to eat truma,
right?
Normally
the avera won't carry over. It won't carry over.
So if someone asks you to eat truma, Truma, and you're not a Cohen.
Right. No, the avera's not going to carry over to the other person. No. In general, ain shlichus d'var avera. Averas do not carry. There's no carryover by avera. Usually, the liability falls on the person who did the act. That's usually what happens. And in Me'ila is the exception to the rule.
But truma also, no.
But truma is a mitzvah. When we're talking about, I understand, but we're talking about shlichus by truma, we're talking about the mitzvah of truma, not the avera of truma. Meaning, I'm asking somebody, it's my produce, I'm asking somebody, listen, I'm going away. You take truma off for me, on my behalf. So that works. But, in other words, the mitzvah works. It's as if I did it.
But the thing is,
eating a truma is a different. It's a whole different story. That's not what.
But kiddushim also, somebody could be mekadesh you.
Somebody can be mekadesh on my behalf.
Right.
Again, that's a mitzvah.
That's a mitzvah. It depends where.
Ein li ela ochel v'nena bedavar she'ein bo pegam. Now, so follow now, because we have a lot of models of me'ila. We have now, so far in totality, three models of Me'ila. The Sota model, the Avodah Zarah model, and the Truma model. But once we have a Gzeira Shava between Truma and Me'ila, so now let's make the following argument. It's such a simple argument. So let's say Me'ila is only a Nisra of eating. Meaning Truma is all about eating. Truma is food and the consumption of food. So maybe Me'ila and this whole idea of misappropriating it should be limited only to food. Simple question. So, and not only that, meaning we're going to go even one step further. Meaning, as we're going to be learning, and hopefully this morning we're going to be learning, that mi'ila can be violated even if it's combined acts of eating and benefit. You'll see what I mean later on. Or combined acts of benefit and eating. And even if, let's say, the combined acts, meaning we're combining a chatzi pruta with a chatzi pruta, and let's say that they were separated by time. Meaning in the world of achila, we know that you are very limited in terms of achila. Achila has to be done within a certain time frame. K'day achilas pras. But mi'ila, if, in fact, mi'ila is connected to truma, so therefore you should be circumscribed by time. That in order to properly be penalized with mi'ila, you have to have consumed the food within a certain amount of time. And yet, as we're going to learn later on, and the Gemara over here is saying it as well, it's not true. Meaning if I'm mo'el a little bit now, and a little bit later, and later could be even much later. So how do I know that I'm subject to mi'ila? Tim'ol ma'al. The double lashon, mikol makom, huh?
There's no time limit.
None.
Years later,
the Gemara is going to say that. Im achid hamor b'truma lo tziv shtei achilas ke'achad af chid hamor b'mi lo tziv shtei achilas ke'achad minayin achal hayom v'achal amachar ve'afilu zman meruma tamalomer tim ma'am mikol makom. And the next part of the brayso, which kind of seems to be making the same exact point, which is why, as I pointed out earlier, the brayso seems to be a little bit shaky. But, okay, fine. But we're going to repeat the same point again. How do I know that even if I eat a little bit now and eat a little bit later, and even in the morning versus the afternoon, some of it in the morning, some of it in the afternoon, and I'll still be subject to mi'ila, again, timol ma'al, the double lashon. Im achid hamor b'truma pigima savanaso ke'achad, minayin la'achila sova achilas chavero, ve'afilu mekan v'ashlosh shalosh shanim. How about 3 years later, minayin tamalama timol ma'al mikom akom. Okay, so again, and I know it sounds like we're making the same point again, but, all right.
Why do you drink over and over from Mikol Makom?
Right, everything's coming from the double lashon of Timol Ma'al. It's really the same point again, so it's not like a new drasha. Ima chet ha'amor b'truma, achi yetzei mena kodesh l'chol. Now, truma, what's happening by truma? Truma goes from kodesh l'chol, meaning that we're taking something with kedusha, i.e. truma, and by eating it now, it's yasa lechulin. I mean, it's kind of funny. It's eaten. Yeah, it's... Right. Right. Right, right. So, right, the language is a little bit difficult in terms of yasa lechul. But the idea, the basic idea is, right, I took something out of truma. Now, let's say it like that. Maybe that helps. Maybe. I take something out away from Kodesh. However, let's say I go mina Kodesh le Kodesh. Let's say I misappropriate, but it's not so bad, because what I'm going to do now is I go from one Kedusha to another Kedusha. Let's give a couple of examples. The Gemara is going to give three. Kigon. Laka chine zavim v'kine zavos v'kine yoldos. Example number one. I take money which is already earmarked to Hekdesh. So the money already has Kedusha. And I use it because my wife needs to bring a carbonyo lettuce. All right, so what do? I misappropriated. But it's not that bad because all I did was redirect. Meaning the money was supposed to go, the money already was dedicated to Hekdesh, which of course means it's not mine anymore. And I take that money and I use it for a carbon. All right, but it's still a carbon. It's still headed to the Beis HaMikdash. Or example number two, Shaklo Vehevi, I'm sorry, Vishakal Shiklo, or let's say I take that money which is already dedicated to Hekdesh, and I give it as my Machitzis HaShekel. Right? Annually, we have an obligation to give a Machitzis HaShekel. So I take money which already was Mukdash, and I give it as my Machitzis HaShekel. Not so bad, meaning it was already going to Kodesh, so all I'm doing is I'm giving it again. It's called misappropriation. Okay, fine. I'm trying to soften it.
somehow I didn't get anything.
I know, but I'm trying to soften it only because the Gemara is making a chiddush of this point. Or vehevi chatos avashama min ahekdesh. Or, and I'm not sure what we're gaining by this third example over here. Sounds like we've covered it already. It sounds like the same of the kinim. But let's say I take hektish money and I use it to buy my chatos or my asham. So again, so basically, not so bad. It's not like the money was yotzei lechulin. All I did was just change its designation. Now there happens to be, this is a tangential point. It's important, but it's a tangential point. Now it happens to be a debate amongst the Tanayim. When are you exactly off the hook in terms of your chatas and your asham? Maybe this is why the Brisa wanted to give this illustration. Just meaning, look, I have to bring a karmen chatas, right? Okay. So at what point exactly do I get now go home and say, check? Meaning, I'm obligated to bring a carbon chatas, I brought it, check. So funny, you would have asked me, I would have said, like, without any hesitation whatsoever, Zrika Saddam. Yeah. Right. Meaning, the whole reason why I'm bringing a carbon chatas is because I need a kapara. And so therefore, when do I go home and say, check? I'm done. I'm off the hook. I would say Zrikas Adam. That's what I would have said. And I am in very good company because that's Rav Yehuda. Right? And I'm even in not better company, but I'm also in good company, and that's how the Rambam passes, like Rav Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon's position, which is hard to explain, is that once the animal is brought into the Azara, check. You can give yourself a check, meaning you have now satisfactorily gave your carbon chatas, you're no longer financially on the hook.
But I
know, and that's why I struggle to explain this position, Rabbi Shimon.
Because once you give the coin, they have a responsibility.
They're now financially responsible.
If it gets lost, they got to replace it.
Okay.
Also, I'm sorry, he also said there's like two mitzvahs, you see.
Right.
One is a kapur is one thing, mm-hmm. and one is
turning it over.
Right, handing it over.
You want a kapur,
okay, good. Very good.
Another one.
Very good.
Turning it a kapur, so that's your response.
I really should read these things. Okay, so good. So Rabbi Shimon's position is harder to explain, but Rabbi Shimon says that once you hand it in, so that's it. You're finished your obligation. So now again, that's a tangential point. But the larger point is the following. Once I take money, which I shouldn't have taken because it was hektish money already, and once I purchase an animal with that money, and once that animal now relieves me of my financial obligation to bring the carbon chatas, I was moel behektish. I misappropriated with that money. And so therefore, again, the bigger point that the Bryce is trying to make is, how do I know that all this is also falls under the category of Me'ila? I didn't go from Kodesh to Chol, I went from Kodesh to Kodesh. And how do I know that I violate Me'ila? Tamalomer, just one second, Tamalomer, Ma'al, Ma'al, Bikomakom. So the Bryce makes, again, that same Ribui, and the Ribui tells us that even here, I'm violation of Me'ila.
Are we talking his money?
It's not his money, meaning once...
Saying, no, is it the money that he...
Originally it was his money. No. Originally it was his money.
His money, okay.
And he was makdish that money.
He was makdish.
Yeah.
Because it's his money. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Isn't this basically of a mitzvah habor
bakri? It could be. In other words, it certainly could be, but... And you may be able to put this under the category of mitzvah habor bakri. But in addition to all that, it's a violation of Me'ila. Meaning, our Masechta is focusing on the penalty of Me'ila. And you'll be penalized with the Me'ila penalty. Full restitution, Chomesh, and you have to now bring another carbon Asham, for the violation of Me'ila. Okay, we are now on Yotesamid Aleph, wishful thinking. And we are 6 lines down from the top of the Amud, 2 dots, okay? And that was it. That was the entire Braisa. So I don't know if you've been following. The Braisa started on the bottom of Yudches Amud Aleph, starting with the words Tana Rabbanan. And Nefesh Echad, 4 lines from the bottom. All of Yudches Amud Beis. And the top of Yudches Amud Aleph. That's a long Braisa. I mean, the Dapim are short, so I don't want to be over dramatic, but it's a long Braisa. Amar Nefesh Nefesh. So let's go back now. This is what we do after quoting an entire Braisa. We go back over some of the points of the Braisa and dissect and analyze. So the first part of the Braisa was Nefesh Echad. I'm sorry, Nefesh. That's the beginning of the Parsha of Me'ilah. It starts off by saying, if a Nefesh. Now, Nefesh is universal. We all have a Nefesh. So everyone subject to the prohibition of Me'ilah, even you Kohen Gadols out there, and even you kings out there, are subject to the Isser of Me'ilah. Echad Yachid, Echad Anasi, Echad Mashiach. Mimashma Shiachol. Bemashma Shiachol. And then the Braisa went on to say, I might have thought they would have been excluded. So my Pshita. So the Gemara says, Nefesh Ksiv. So the Gemara says, isn't it obvious? Meaning, I might have thought that there should be excluded, so therefore we have the word Nefesh. Why would I have thought they would have been excluded? So I gave my own Pshat yesterday, which may be correct, that that because previously by the Karban Chatas, the Torah then divided. In other words, kings have a special Karban Chatas, and Kohen Gadols have a special Karban Chatas, and so the Torah wants to tell us that by Me'ilah, it's one uniform Karban. Asha. Oh, so the Gemara is going to say something similar. In other words, the Gemara is going to give a different explanation. Ma'u detema amar echmana v'asher yitei memenu alzar v'haylav zaru. We know Shemana Mishcha, right? It's a good example. So the anointing oil. Now, if anyone who's not a Kohen uses the anointing oil, that's an Avera. It's a serious Avera, right? We talked about it in Masech Sekrisos. So, people who are using the Shemana Mishcha, now Kohen Gadol, He's using the Shemana Mishcha, meaning when he was anointed as a Kohen Gadol, he was anointed with the Shemana Mishcha. So you see that by the Kohen Gadol, and King also.
Right.
So you see that by the Kohen Gadol, the Shemana Mishcha, which for anybody else would have been misappropriating, for the Kohen Gadol, is fine. So I might have thought now that the Kohen Gadol, you see, that he may be excluded from the entire Parsha of Me'ilah. Maybe. That's the Hava Mina. So Lav Zarhu, the Ha Imshech Begavei, Kamash Malan. So that's the Chiddush. The Chiddush is that, no, in other words, if we're talking about anything else that belongs to Hektesh, even if misappropriated by the Kohen Gadol, that is Me'ilah.
Except when anointed.
Right, correct. And remember the story by Aaron HaKohen, he had the two pearls of oil going up and down his beard, and he was worried about Me'ilah for this. In other words, again, that's part of the Havamin of the Gemara.
What was it? I forgot.
Aaron HaKohen had two beads of oil, the Shemana Mishcha, that stayed in his beard. And the Gemara then says is that when he spoke, remember we offer two pshatim over there in that Gemara, either when he spoke or when he got his beard trimmed, so the beads would run up to the root of his beard, so they wouldn't, you know, in other words, they wouldn't run away, they would stay there, and then when finished, they would then run down and just hang at the end of his beard. So
right.
Okay, now the Gemara is going to do a little bit of a summary statement. I like this. The Gemara now does what I tend to do, not always, but I'd like to do, and that is just let's see if we can summarize now because it's a lot of information over yesterday and today. In other words, basically what we have now is a connection between Me'ilah and Sota and Avodah Zarah and Truma. And not exactly the same, by the way. By Sota and Me'ilah, it's the same usage of the word. By Sota and Avodah Zarah, it's the same usage of the word Me'ilah. By Truma, it's really Gzeirah Shavah. So the Gemara's usage of the word Akshay, which I'm thinking means Hekesh, Lav Dafka. So in other words, you know, right. It just means that they're connected. Okay. Lesota dafa gavdalapaga gabe hektishnami gabe hektishnami. So what do we learn from sota, even if though there's no pigima? As I explained earlier, but here the Gemara says it straight out, meaning when the sota commits her adultery, so she doesn't go through a change. She is not physically transformed, because she's already a bulas baal. In other words, she already was transformed by her husband. So it's, and yet it's Me'ilah. So the Gemara says, so same thing in the world of hektish. So that takes us to the categories of things that don't depreciate, meaning like the examples that we had in our Mishnah, the ring worn on the finger of the woman, or the necklace that she wore, or drinking out of the gold cup. So that is the Sota version of Me'ilah, meaning things that don't depreciate, but still you get benefit, right? Like we said earlier, Sota is all about the Hana,
Aliyah is the value of getting what, benefit from the gold cup.
Whatever. In other words, I want to rent. I want to rent. Meaning, but I'll say it. I want to rent jewelry for tonight. Okay, how much does that cost? There's an inherent value to usage. And then what do we learn from Avodah Zarah? Shinui. Avodah Zarah is all about the change. God forbid. But I leave a Kadosh Baruch Hu and I go to Avodah Zarah. That's all Shinui. That's all an act of Shinui. There's no Hana over there. That's Shinui. So another format, another model, so to say, prototype of Mi'ila is just a simple act of Shinui. So, things that are subject to depreciating value, you only violate Mi'ila when you depreciate its value. It needs a shinu, it needs a physical change. So, an axe is only going to be, an axe that belongs to Hektesh. I will only be mo with that axe, only if I use and depreciate its value. But just simply, let's say I take the axe and, use it as to shade myself from the sun. Not a great example, but you understand. In other words, I use it but don't depreciate it. That's not mi'ila. Again, not appropriate, right? Not right, but not mi'ila. V'yivkom. I'm sorry, v'yivkom upagam. Akshe rechman l'truma. And finally, what do we learn from the truma? Ma truma ki yochal prat l'mazik abehek tishnami kol davar achila ki mazik le'pater. And if something is consumable, like truma, and instead of eating it, I'm mazik, right? I burn the truma that could have been eaten, right? Or I destroy the truma. So there, you're mazik, but you're not, in other words, that's not what you're supposed to do with the truma. You're supposed to eat it. So, and again, I know it's odd because we're going from the mitzvah of truma to the isra of me'ila. But by me'ila, it's the same thing. Meaning if I take something which is edible, and Rashi says, eating over here, don't get caught up in eating. Meaning anything consumable, anything usable. If I take something which can be used to my benefit, and instead of benefiting it, I just rip it up, I tear it up, right? I take a garment and I tear it up. That's not me'ila. Again, it's wrong, and of course, whenever you're mazik, you have to pay for that which you destroyed. It's simply not me'ila. There's no chomsh to talk about. There's no carbon ashram to talk about. Me'ila is specifically in a scenario where I benefited from something which stood to be benefited from. And again, depending on what it is, meaning if it's something which is subject to deteriorating, yes, I have to deteriorate it. Kate said, "Nasna katla amalei rav kan l'rav zvid udahav alav bar ifgumehus." The Gemara over here ends up this whole discussion with almost like a funny conversation. Okay. So we talk about gold. Now gold, right, in our accounting, we put gold under the category of things that are not subject to depreciation. And therefore, if I benefit from gold that belongs to Bedek Abayis, I am Moel, even if I don't depreciate its value. To which now the Gemara has a conversation between Rav Kahana and Rav Zvid. And Rav Kahana says to Rav Zvid, gold doesn't depreciate. V'ha da'ave dekalte denon lehecha azal. Now, gold of the daughter-in-law of Danon. That's his name?
Nun.
I'm sorry, of Dekalte Danun. Okay, that's his name, right? Nun. Yeshua's father's name was Nun. So Dekalte Danun. Lehecha Azal. So where did that gold go? Now, apparently he was pointing to a particular daughter-in-law who received gold as one of her wedding gifts. And over the course of years, it depreciated. The gold depreciated in value. So in other words, how can you tell me gold doesn't depreciate when we see that over the course of a long time, gold does in fact depreciate? So Amalei Dilma Dahava Diramyan Kaltech Hu. So his response is, and it doesn't seem like a flattering response, well, how is it different than the gold of your daughter-in-law, which apparently also depreciated over the course of time? Now, again, you know what I say. There's a story behind the story. Rav Zvid and Rav Kahana, I don't know what the story happens to be. Right? The Gemara tells us some of the wildest stories regarding Rav Kahana. Right? He was a very interesting personality amongst the Amorayim in the Gemara.
Who killed someone on Purim?
No, that was different. That's Rav Zera and Rav Zera and... No, Rav Zera and... Who was the other one?
Twice. Yeah.
Who was the other one? Rav Chista?
Yeah.
Maybe. Anyway, but the Gemara at the end of Baba Kama, right, if I remember that correctly, tells us some unbelievable stories about Rav Kahana. In the meantime, however, I'm not sure how to fully follow that exchange, but there obviously was an exchange over there. But let's get to the basic point of the Gemara. Look, the point is like this, is that it doesn't deteriorate and depreciate immediately, meaning that, yes, you're right, gold, of course, is going to depreciate over the course of time, as is everything is going to depreciate over the course of time, meaning everything eventually goes down in value. There's no commodity that keeps its value. You're right. But, I know, that's, I hear the same commercials. Yeah, it thins out a little bit. Everything will. But in terms of our accounting, meaning when we are making a basic distinction between the things that are subject to depreciation and things that are not, we mean things that depreciate with usage, meaning immediately. Those things will be under the category of things that are subject to depreciation, like clothing, like food, meaning those things will be subject to depreciate immediately, like an automobile. But gold will depreciate, but over the course of a long amount of time, and so therefore we put it under the category of things that are not subject to depreciate. And finally, one more point to go before we start the next Mishnah. Now, we said in the Mishnah, we illustrated this example by carbon chattas, meaning when the carbon chattas is alive, so it's something which stands to be depreciated in value. And therefore, I'm only mulled by the carbon chattas when I use it and depreciate its value. But once it's dead, and therefore it has no value whatsoever, so therefore you're mulled even without depreciating its value. That's the example of the Mishnah. Now, you could have asked this question yesterday, but let's ask this question today. When the carbon chattas is alive, it's subject to depreciate in value? Meaning it's a carbon chattas.
No, enough.
Right, but in other words, the fluctuation of price really, it makes no difference to you. Meaning it's going to go on to the Mizbeach. As far as you're concerned, you don't care about whether it goes up and down in price. As long as it's still a fit carbon, so then that's all you're interested in. So why are we saying it's something which is subject to depreciation? The Gemara is going to ask this question. Anenem enachatas, michdei, ibe behema tamima, hainu koshal zahav. If it's a behema tamima, it's really same as a golden cup. It doesn't depreciate, meaning even if it does, so what? It's a carbon chattas. You're going to offer it the same carbon chattas as when it was, you know, it was 10 pounds heavier. It's the same carbon chattas. Amara Papa, Babasma, Muskin, and Sarah Papa says, fine, you're right. And so when you read our Mishnah, the way that you have to understand our Mishnah is that we're not talking about a carbon chattas which is a tumim and fit for the Mizbeach. We're talking about a carbon chattas balas mum. And since it's a balas mum, it seems to be redeemed. Now, because it's a carbon chattas.
No, it doesn't deter it.
Because you sell it.
Right, correct. Right. All right. Let's move on. All right, Nana Bikachati Pruta. Okay, we are now on the Mishnah on the top of Yud Tes Amud Beis. And the Mishnah over here's basic point is what we've made already, but we made it in the context of the Braisa. Now we get to see it in the Mishnah. Nana Bikachati Pruta, Upagam Bikachati Pruta. So, I get a half a Pruta of value, of a Hana'a, a benefit, and then I destroy the other half Pruta value without benefiting. Oh, shenene b'shave pruta b'davar echad upaga b'shave pruta b'davar acher. I get a hana of pruta from one place and I'm pogame in another place. Meaning they're not come the hana and the depreciating value does not come from the same source. Lo ma'al achiyene b'shave pruta v'yifkam b'shave pruta b'davar echad. This is what we learned from Truma earlier this morning, that the depreciation and the benefit has to be coming from the same source. Like when I eat truma. When I eat truma, I'm diminishing its value and I'm benefiting from it all at the same time. All coming from the same source. No, no, in other words, the Mishnah, no, the Mishnah is just simply making the same point that we learned earlier, but without connecting it to Truma. The Braisa taught us that this is because of the connection to Truma. Ein Moel, Acher Moel, B'mugdashin, Ella, Behema, V'klisharis, Belvad. Now, right, we have this Ein Achar, many different contexts. This Ein Bishal Achar Bishal, Ein Tochen Achar Tochen, Ein Moel, Acher Moel. There's no repeat Me'ila on an item. And for a very simple reason. Because once you're Moel on an item, you have now removed it from the status of Hekdesh. It's now Chulin. So you can't misappropriate a second time, because by the time you get to the second time, it no longer belongs to Hekdesh. It's yours. Good. So, that's true, but of course, like with every rule, there are exceptions. And the Mishnah says, what would be an exception? Behemo klisharis. Let's say I have a carbon. An animal designated as a carbon. And now, let's say I took a ride on the animal. Okay, pony ride. In this case, of course, not a pony, but cow rides. So I took a ride on the cow that was designated as a carbon. And then my friend took another ride, and then my other friend took another ride. Okay, so the Mishnah gives exactly this example. Rachav agabe behema uvachaver v'rachav uvachaver v'rachav kulan ma'alu. They were all subject to me'ila. Why? Right? Ein me'ila ha me'ila. Yeah, not here. Because this is a carbon invested with kedusha saguf. Where did the kedusha go? Meaning, if it's something which is redeemable, so we know where the kedusha went. The kedusha went because you misappropriated. But by a carbon, despite the fact that you misappropriated it, nevertheless, it's subject to meil again because the kedusha is still there. I'm not sure. It's a good point. And also, same thing with Kli Sharis. Meaning, because Kli Sharis, Kedusha doesn't go anywhere. It stays. Or let's say everyone goes over to a carbon chattis and starts plucking hairs. I pluck a little hair, my friend plucks a little hair. And we're all plucking hair from this chatas. Mi'ila. Rebbe Omer called Davish Sha'im lo pijon yesh bamo achemol. Anything that's not redeemable, so there's going to be mi'ila after mi'ila. Now, as the Gemara itself will point out, what did Rebbe just add to the whole discussion? That's exactly what we've been saying throughout this entire Mishnah. Okay, let me just do one little piece of Gemara and we'll stop. Mani masnisim Rabbi Nechemi hi detanya imo achemol bebehema bavad. Rabbi Nechemi omer bebehema klisharis. Now here in the Braisa we have a machlokes between the Tanakam and Rabbi Nechemia. And Tanakam says that Me'ila is only subject to, the idea of moel achemol is only by animals, only by karbanos. And Rabbi Nechemi says karbanos and klisharis. My time in Tanakam kasav Rabbi Nyana de behema ksiv. Dichsiv be'el Hashem. So the Tanakhama says, look, because the Me'ila Acher Me'ila is only by animals, because if you look at the Parsha of Me'ila, it mentions it in the context of animals. And Rav Nechemia, Amalcha, Kavachom, and Rav Nechemia says, wait a second, I have for you a very simple Kavachomer. Meaning, Imacherim may be Lekdusha Sam, who asked Malakosh King? Look, Kli Sharis. You know what a Kli Sharis does? It takes an item that does not have Kedusha Saguf, and it invests the item with Kedusha Saguf. A Kli Sharis converts something from a redeemable item to a non-redeemable item. So if the Kli Sharis can do that for something else, so the Kli Sharis itself, which is a non-redeemable item, Lo Kol Shekein, how much more so is it not going to be, is it not going to be deconsecrated when you use it? So therefore, by Kli Sharis, there's Me'ila, followed then by Me'ila, since it's a non-redeemable item, so therefore it's subject to Me'ila. Okay. Just one last parting thought, right? We're basically now constructing a Kavachomer to include Kli Sharis. Ein Onshin Min Adin, you can't punish based on a Kavachomer. So how does that work exactly? Well, just a parting thought, I don't know. So someone will suggest. In the meantime, however, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up with Rebbe. We're trying to figure out what Rebbe's adding to the Mishnah. And good. Everyone have a wonderful Shabbos. Refuah Shleima. Rafael Zak Avram Ben Yakir Abigail. Okay. Ilu Nishmas.
Nejat.
Meir Ben Mashalom. Rabbi Chanan Ben Akash Amar Ratzakash Baruch Hu Zach Yisrael Afich Achir Mentor Mitzvah Shenemar. Anai Chafik Samad Shukar Yagut Tov Yadim.